Jaime had decided that he would return Sansa, and the younger girl as well, if she could be found. It was not like him to win back his honor, but the notion of keeping faith when they all expected betrayal amused him more than he could say. Hello, and welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones living card game podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brad Zeiler. These days, my co-hosts may differ, but we're generally pulling from at least some familiar core voices. Many thanks go out to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Martin, Card Game DB, and Josh Woodward for the CC licensed music you're hearing now. So, this there you go. Is season 5.
That one cracks me up. The thought of him secretly chuckling all night long because he's actually going to keep his word when no one believes he will is pretty great.
It's like he's assholing himself out of being an asshole. It's like, hey, the douchey thing would be to, you know, go back on this, but somehow I'm being more of a douche by being a good guy.
Yeah, sort of. I still don't think Jamie's really all that much of a douche, but
his journey is definitely one of the more fascinating ones, both like as a from a character development and where he goes and what he does.
Indeed. You know where he should go?
Where?
To an appearance on Two Champs and a Chump.
That would be, you want to talk about a draw? If we could get any, I mean any, of the HBO actors on here.
It would be phenomenal. I tried to reach out to, what's his name, Hodor? Christian Nairn, right?
Yeah. Yes,
yeah. He had liked a few of our posts on Twitter. So I was like, hey, maybe I can contact him. That would be epic to get him on the show for a little while. No luck.
Like, he's touring around here. You might want to try again. I believe he's currently in the Midwest doing his Rave of Thrones.
Really? Oh, yeah, I saw some about that. That's pretty sweet. Yeah, it might be worth giving him another shot and seeing what we could do. I mean, turns out we do have a pretty big triple-digit episode coming up disturbingly soon, I think you might say.
It's sneaking up on us, I think is the right way to describe that.
Yeah, yeah. Something wicked this way does indeed come. In, at this point, roughly like 6 more weeks.
Whoop whoop.
Yep.
They'll put us April something.
Yeah, so I've kind of been mulling it over. We'll see what we can pull off. I've got a few ideas and might be willing to entertain some more thoughts depending on what folks think, so.
Maybe we can get another one of those live streams up for Moon Boy.
We did learn an awful lot about that last time we did it, so.
I would be giving it a shot.
Yeah, I think we could run it much more smoothly this time around.
So maybe we'll start propping that on the Facebook and the Twitter, seeing if we can get that logistically lined up.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get that set. That's just a few weeks away at this.
Yeah, to get some co-host on co-host love going.
Yeah, by the time folks listen to this, Moonboy is going to be March 7th this year.
Always a good time.
Yeah, so definitely come check it out if you're on the fence. I know Carl had several extra prizes and things donated this year.
Like, he has a wonderful job running, as far as from a structure standpoint, I Carl does probably the smoothest job of anyone I know of running a tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, just hands down, no problems. Everything's always on time. Everything's timely. Everything always gets buffed out. Like, it is a weekend to enjoy, for sure.
Definitely, definitely. And the nice thing is, I know he's excited for Moonboy to be one of their first events in the newly remodeled store.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so for anyone that's been to Meta, it was one half of kind of a strip mall shopping center thing, but the owner of Meta Games actually owned the whole thing, so he remodeled the other half, and then the store moved over there
and reopened this last Friday. So by the time listeners hear this, it'll have been open for a week. And you should go look them up on Facebook, Metagames Unlimited, and check out some of the pictures and stuff. The remodel is slick. This is going to be a very, very swank event, I think. Excitement here. I mean, we've got store championship season running, and that's, of course, what led us over to Moon Boy. But we've seen a kind of bizarre side effect of this particular time of year crop up online. Did you see that the eBay auction for the store championship prizes? I don't want to throw out too many details about exactly who it is. I'm sure listeners that want to can go look it up. But there's the mat and, you know, promo cards, which that's not surprising. People tend to do that sort of thing all the time. I've sold a couple of my old Gen Con promos and stuff. But what really seems shocking to me is the buy is actually up for sale, or one of the regional buys.
That's probably the one thing I find about it that's surprising. Like, you see all the other swag hits AGOT cards or hits eBay all the time. Playmats, even like some of the, I've never seen a trophy, but it wouldn't surprise me to see something like that show up. So seeing the plaque up and the alt art card, that I kind of shrug off. What's odd is that there's no playmat, but the buy is up. It's an item that the rest of it's just some material stuff, and it's nice to have if you want it. But that's the one thing I feel, you know, you really gotta, I mean, earn. The fact that you, right now for $10, it's the equivalent of me taking down a field of 20 or more at some places. That's just,
well, I think the trick is, you know, the promo cards, the playmats, any of that, still fall, I think, in the LCG kind of mindset that, well, okay, it doesn't matter if you have the Tyrion store championship mat or I have the freaking, I don't know, core set box art from the very first league or some Magic the Gathering mat that I already owned or whatever, right? There's no gameplay advantage. Same thing with the alternate art version of Street of Sisters. It's literally the same as far as the game is concerned, and as far as my performance in it is concerned. But there's actual material advantage to having that buy.
Now, it's not clear if a store is selling this, if someone is selling it on behalf of a store, because it seems odd that there's no playmats, and then it's one lone copy of Three Assistants. Like, the details here seem odd.
I believe there actually is also a playmat and a plaque for sale. From
I saw the plaque. I did not see a playmat.
There's a playmat as well. They've got a little of each up.
You'd think there'd be, you know, I mean, there's what, 8 mats included? 4 mats?
Four, I think it was.
You've got, I think it's like 30-some-odd Street of Sisters. That's a participation prize.
Right.
And yet you only see one of these things. So there's some details to be fleshed out here. And I don't know if that changes the issue, like you said, but it's just odd. Like, I mean, can FFG do anything here?
I don't know. I don't know if there is an official policy.
We don't really know who they are. And what's to say, if they say screw you, FFG, and they sell that buy, how are you going to know what store that's from? How do you know which buy it is?
I have no idea.
I mean, if I roll into Chicago with, let's say I buy it, and I roll into Chicago with it, and I'm like, hey, here's this buy I got. Were you at this tournament? Yeah. Like, what's K-Tom supposed to do? Like, call the store and double check every buy that rolls in? Seems kind of crazy.
Yeah. I just don't know if there is a good solution to anything, you know, once it's been bought. I think, you know, if it goes, then somebody just has it and uses it, you know? But I will be very curious to see.
I don't know if you cancel it.
Yeah, I just don't know if it'll make it to completion.
It will be. It's an interesting to check out. It should still be running by the time this airs. I believe it should have a day or so left on it.
Yeah,
but
we'll see.
This is definitely something to follow. And I mean, it's interesting. It's never happened before in Thrones. Thrones has always done a very good job, in my opinion, of keeping the money out of it. And this is the first time I feel like it's gotten dangerously close to, or a little too close to comfort for most of us.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, I saw a friend of the show, Buzz, most folks may know him as OK Targ, posted a pretty amusing response to it that said, "Real men pay the iron price, not the gold." Well, okay, so for updates and store championship related things, hey, the hosts of Two Champs and a Chump went and competed at a couple different events this last weekend. And I think following in our grand tradition, we will start with the lower placement and work our way up, right?
Sure, and I am so glad that's not me.
Yeah, that is me. Been a little rough. I have not had a lot of deck building inspiration since Worlds, and really just didn't want to have to play Landing Knights all over again. Turns out, as it were, that would have been a pretty smooth idea, but instead, Aaron talking about Martell Aloof and Apart kind of tripped my trigger, so I sat down to work on a build of it. I'll, of course, you know, get around to posting the deck list with this episode, but mine, I think, definitely leaned a little different from ones that, like, he and Dark Notch were running. I kind of cut the summer package for some other things I liked, Deceit and a little more House Messengers and Tyene Sand, things like that, the Warcrest Viper. So I'll let you look at the details. But in the test games I had beforehand, I really dug how it played. Set up really well, 5+ cards every game, and just really kept the pressure up, a lot of aggro and higher claim plots. And, you know, I thought it had some solid tools, with the thought being that Lanny and Bera were likely to be fairly popular down there, knowing the guys that play there. I figured Deceit was going to be money to move no attachments around. And yes, it was. I only played one Baron, one Lanny player. But it was totally glorious to military the Lanny player, wait till he decided who he was or wasn't defending with, and know that I was going to win the challenge. By the way, using the stealth on Lady Nim's guard to ensure that I won the challenge. Then in the action window after he had declared defenders, to give her stealth and no attachments to my house Dane Knight, who had been taken by enslaved, so he popped back to my side, then forced him to kill someone that actually mattered for military claim, then intrigue back with my newly stealthy Dane Knight.
I really dig that event. Like those little tricky combos like that you find. I mean, it definitely requires a lot of, you know, repetitions and getting familiar with seeing those little things, but I dig that event in a big way.
Oh, yeah. I've always loved how flexible it is, but never really had the heart to, like, fully commit to it in a joust deck. I'd just kind of been in some melee decks that I had fiddled around with out of Martell, and I really feel like it pulled its weight over the course of the day.
I love it.
Yeah. So, general thoughts here, on my round by round. Round one was against a Bear Maester, build. That was Keith. And I opened, the first turn pushing two claim, I think off of Retaliation, if I remember right, with my Bannerman. He had Man-at-Arms and the Knight of Flowers and Lomas and some tech to use, First Ranger to stand Baratheons by making him Night's Watch and such. But my two claim put him in a pretty tough spot, and he opted to keep the Knight of Flowers with First Ranger on it and let Lomas die to the military claim. And so, knowing he's got a Maester deck with, like, five more chains on it, I figure that turn two, it's pretty likely to see at the gates. Unfortunately for him, I was sitting on a Green Seer's Raven in hand. So I canceled his at the gates on turn two, and he just couldn't really get into it from there. So, took a pretty quick win on that one. Round two was against Zach Bunn. A lot of folks know him as a pretty hardcore Targ player, and no surprise, he was playing Targ Heir to the Iron Throne here, abusing Danny and such. Turn one, I think, was fairly even. Turn two, however, turned out to be fairly rough. He went ahead with his Aftermath and had Danny and Strong Belwas and some other chud on the board, along with a Heron Hall. And then I was left with Tyene and two Starfall Cavalries. We kind of had some back and forth, and I thought I was going to be able to take that one with some careful play, because, of course, I had two claim. And so he tried to trigger his Danny on his first challenge, which I then used, he called it Thinking, on, and he Heron Hauled. That's solid. Leaves him with the two characters, the Strong Belwas and Danny. Now I'm setting on a second, he calls it Thinking, which I plan to use on another Danny trigger or anything else that might crop up. Swing back with my two military, be able to actually knock things out. Turned out he had the To Be a Dragon. And let's see, the To Be a Dragon, which stood Danny, brought somebody back. I had a Parting Blow, which I used then with Cavalry Died to re-kneel Danny, drew a card, which turned out to be another Parting Blow. Let's see. Then he challenged again. He called it Thinking. Then, let's see. He killed, I think maybe it was Strong Belwas to cancel that. Had a second, he calls it Thinking, to stand Danny, bring him back again, despite everything I could do. It was just a nightmare of, he calls it Thinking, To Be a Dragons, and Parting Blows, all turn. So that went very poorly for me at the end of that event battle, and he wrapped it up pretty quickly.
I bet.
Yeah.
The cold thing.
Yeah, that second To Be a Dragon was the last card in his hand. Basically any other card, and I could have done it, but nope. Round three was against Jacob, who was playing Lanny Knights. I didn't see the whole thing, but my guess is probably about 90% similar to the one I've been playing for quite a while now. And it was a solid game. That's who I had my Deceit play against. But I couldn't quite close it. I got up to 13 twice. We went to 7 plots. And I could just never quite get that last bit of power I needed. Probably based on the fact that I couldn't trigger any of my draw due to his Iron Throne. So being basically all character-based draw definitely kind of sucks against Lannister. Last round was against Matt Phillips, who was playing a little bit of a different deck this time around. It was Targ Conquest to Lannister, running some Neil, running Danny, running Long Lances. A lot of cool stuff, but I emptied his hand really quickly with my two claim. And on the first turn, he dropped a huge board to try to match all the stuff I had out. And so I Valored to clear it. kept the pressure up with draw off of Vipers, Bannerman, Eerie save for a save and stuff like that. He just couldn't stay in it. So I wrapped that one up, but it only left me with a 2-2 record, which was not good enough since we only did a cut to top four.
Aw, William.
Yep. So that just goes to show, don't take a deck that you've only played three times before a tournament, because it may not work out for you.
That's a big lesson.
Yeah, but I don't know. It was a fun deck. I'll keep tinkering with it. We'll see if I go ahead and play it at Moon Boy, or if I revert to something I'm pretty sure I could literally play while asleep, i.e. Lannister Knights. Who knows? Maybe I'll dream something else up between now and then.
There's always time.
Just gotta believe. A little less than a month.
So right now there's time. Let me rephrase that.
Yeah. So how'd yours go?
A little better than yours. I was in a rut like you, and a week ago reached out to a couple different players and was like, what do you got that either you want tested or you're kind of excited about or you wish you could play but you're stuck, you know, you're too busy to hit some tournaments up, like anything. I collected a couple, and John Bruno sent me one. I think I'm going to play at Moon Boy, so I'm going to keep a little under wraps.
Okay.
And I got like four or five Octagon games in with it, kind of like your experience. And I went like 4-1. Like, I liked the deck. I dug what I was doing. I liked the way it played. And then I stopped and thought, and I was like, what do I do? Do I take Tried and True, or do I take New Hotness? And then I remembered that this tournament was going down at a bar, and there would be beer at this bar, and I would want to drink it. So
valid.
That made that easy, and Tried and True, one made its way up to Chicago. So I was like, I can play you half drunk, and I'm going to have to, so let's do this. Turned out to be a solid call. I get up there, surprisingly large turnout. I think we had 16 guys. Solid numbers for, you know, a homegrown first year event.
Yeah, not even actually a store championship, so, I mean, that's a solid draw then.
Most of the guys in Chicago said, you know, let's be the best meta we can be, and we gotta start throwing some stuff. So, prize support was this awesome Silver Chalice, won by Mr. Tommy Pliss, who I believe we're gonna have on the next week, talk about that.
I think so.
Rocking out with his Siege deck. You may have seen it. I believe he top 8'd at Worlds. I know he at least top 16'd. Took, I think, a regional or two with it, some store tournaments with it, and just had phenomenal success all season. He's kind of been nursing it along, tuning it, getting it ready. And he was kind of in the same boat I was. He's like, I want to retire it after Worlds. Nice mother. He had some other things to say about, but he's like, when the booze is flowing, gotta play what you know.
Yeah.
I was like, valid point. So he went with what he knew. I will get more out of that, how that turned out for me later. I mean, obviously, upper hand goes Tommy the winner. So I took Stark Wings. There were three other Stark Wings in the field. I was surprised.
Wow.
One was kind of this classic Rivers build that's been floating around that most people seem to play. Mine is not like that. And having looked over both decklists now, all the plots besides Valor are different. And then we're probably 15 cards different on composition. Maybe 20. I mean, it was significant. One piloted by Bleers had like a Shadows package. And then one, piloted by Michael Hanch, old CCG player, Shenanigans on the board once upon a time. Now he's a dad, so he's not exactly on there a lot. But it was more like a grab baggy, just, you know, like a bundle of good plots and good cards. Minstrel's Muse, and just, I don't know, Forgotten Plans, just some solid plots. All, of course, opened with Head the Gates for Lewin, and then did some things from there. But, so it was interesting. I played two of them on the day. First round was against Jeff Murray, who was on last 2 weeks ago promoting the podcast, or reporting the tournament.
he was playing kind of his take on the Lainey Darkwings deck that won Worlds. And it was solid, a little back and forth, but he ran Rivers, and I hate Rivers. I think that your deck can compensate for them in other ways. Not to quote John Bruno a lot, but I like plots that do things. I like plots that do things. And so I ran Cities and he ran Rivers, and when I can kneel your problem character early and then kill him two turns later and then blow up your Harrenhal Hall for the win, and all you've done by that point is managed to put three, maybe four cards in your hand, like, I don't know, I just feel like I came out ahead in a big way. So plots helped me a lot in that game. Pretty solid, fell in control the whole game. Second game, against Derek Billings, playing a Starkwing deck. His was more of the traditional one that you see out there. All three also ran Winter Tech, which was odd, and Derek had some choke in his that I don't want to say seemed to backfire in our game. Problem with the Darkwing agenda, I feel, part of the issue is the economy curve is different. Like, I guess the composition, like the number of econ cards you need in there is higher, obviously, because you have a bigger deck.
Right.
So sometimes you have to run suboptimal econ cards, like just for the sheer fact that they are economy cards. So, anywho, so yeah, sometimes you have to run these a higher number of econ cards, and sometimes you grasp at straws a little bit, or you tweak your decks. I think the wrong way to do is then tweak your deck to try and maximize some of these things. Maybe you run Kingdom of Shadows, so you throw in a few more Shadows cards. Run the Winter King's Road to throw in a few more winter effects. But again, even with that, with the high deck size, if, you know, variance does, you know, play a role, that's why it's a drawback. And the problem with Stark is you really need to have a decent board position, because a lot of your events trigger off winning things or doing things with your character. Die by the Sword, Price of War, No Quarter, Routing the Charge, things like that. So if you don't have characters out to do anything, you can't play your events. And if you're not cycling through your events, you can't eliminate that variance.
Sure.
It's kind of, it's why draw is so good from like a game theory standpoint. So Derek got behind early. Not early, like mid-game started to draw behind. Couldn't really get through his deck. And he wasn't a lot of econ cards, and he's running this winter sub theme, which I get. Like, if Mirror is going to be restricted, and I was talking with Hanch about this afterwards and why he did the same thing, he's like, if you're going to make your character a restricted card, whatever your restricted card is, you need to be able to maximize it. And you can double Mirror's effectivity by making a winner. Fair enough. There's plenty of star cards to help with that. I get it. But the problem is turn two, E time for Ravens, and he's making it winter. So now he's behind on econ cards, and his soft choke, I mean, it's hurting me, but I mean, you can just see it's just slowly eating away at him. I'm able to push through things. I can push through the entry, Condemned by the Council has one econ card. Like, you can, it's not giving him the advantage and the boost that he wants. And I catch my mirror first, and I'm blanking two of his cards.
Oof.
It's not the best. So, I mean, it is a slugfest. I really do feel like it came down. I mean, it went almost to time, if not to time. And I mean, I barely squeaked that win out. Derek played a solid game. Just kind of unfortunate how things, you know, some things just didn't go his way. And I think a lot of these Darkwing decks, like when people go out and they build these bigger decks, same with like TLV, a lot of it goes in, like a lot of the battle is won, the hay is in the barn before you ever sit down. Like, if you don't have this made in a way to set yourself up for success, these bigger decks are going to give you problems. So, I don't agree with the winner sub theme. I think it cost him, ultimately. But that's my two cents. So, anywho, good game. Feeling solid 2-0, right? Like,
okay. You know,
third game is against Tommy, playing a Siege deck. Now, obviously, this man just went, you know, top 16 at Worlds. So, I'm a little scared of it. That, and it's so freaking fast.
And yeah, that's the real trick, I think.
Tempo deck, a lot of problems. He just will have more beef out than me. He will go faster than me. It is a problem. So, especially when you rely on events for draw, things like Fear of Winter grind that down real fast. We play, and he only drops one epic first turn. And I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. So we dance a little bit, and I stall. You know, because that's usually my game plan with Siege. Just you just kind of got to stall, and stall, and stall. I learned from playing Dark Nage at Worlds that if you can just drive their nose into the ground and slow them down, eventually they will stall out. Because they have little to no draw of any sort in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just take the game down to nothing, slow it down, well, you just will not be able to recover. You can slowly start chipping away at them. But step one has to be slow the game down. And I do not follow my own advice in Tonka. I chip along, kind of like Dark Knowledge's game. You go, holy shit, I'm going to actually win this. And you just slowly flip it. And next thing you know, it's 3-15, you got the game won. Despite the fact that he's wiping your board and doing all these big challenges and kicking your ass first two turns. So that was a good game. First time I think I've beaten Tommy in competitive play with that against that Siege deck. It's a monster. So now I'm sitting, final game is against Ben Terpstra, another Iowa guy. It was nice to have two Iowa guys at the top. Ben's playing Laney Tunnels, and I'm a little buzzed, and I don't think either of us really cared a ton. I mean, that was nice things about that point, making the cut, and it's like, hey, let's have a good time. I kept a hand I never should have, and he just pummels me into the ground. It was embarrassingly bad.
Ooh.
I think I had like a 5-card flop. It was like 4 resource cards, like a sea, a street, a great keep, and something else. But like 1 weenie. I was like, this is cool. Like, this will work. No, it will not. Because against Tunnels, you're going to need a lot of dudes out there, because he's going to kneel out all your shit. And that's exactly what he did. So I watched all my cards sit sideways for about 10 minutes while he was rolled over me unopposed. It was pretty rough. So we played another game afterwards. It was much more competitive. Felt better about it. It's like, well, if I see him in the cut, I think I can do this.
Okay.
So cut comes. We all get these awesome steins, this cool logo they made. Pretty sweet deals. Pour beer in it, playing Brian Bleers, playing Dark Wings, Dark Words. And I was like, great. Another mirror match. But he's like, well, I've been working with Bruno on this. It's a little brainchild of his. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, it's kind of like that. Anything you can do, I can do better. But it's, you know, JB is going to outstark me, my own baby. I was like, this is going to be embarrassing. Obviously, he's in the cut, so it's going well. And we play, he's doing like the shadow sub-package. So he's opening Kingdom of Shadows and going from there. He's not getting Lewin.
Okay.
Which seemed interesting on some level. I don't know what all was going on. He did some Frozen Outpost. Is that the +2 strength, +4 if it's a Warcraft one?
I believe so.
So he's got that, and he's got Northland Keep, and I think he's doing some of those shenanigans to push through his challenges, where he'll use it on your guy and then remove your guy from the challenge. Which is clever. I mean, don't get me wrong. Super clever.
Yeah, that is.
And if not, I mean, you can use it on defense, like use it the legit way, but I mean, he did that once, and I was like, oh, shit. A well-timed cancel took care of that. But it was just slow. Like, I got up on him, and I got a hit on characters. And I don't think he won a single challenge the first game we played.
Hmm.
I mean, he sat there, and he just seemed frustrated. He's like, it's not been like this. This isn't how it goes. He's like, it's just, your deck's too fast. Like, I just can't get it up to speed. I'm like, okay, well, after I won, I was like, all right, let's play again. We got time. We sit again, same thing happens. And I don't know if it's one of those things where, because of the shadows, he would innately kind of want to lean back, hold back a little bit, and I feel like he needed to maybe be more aggressive, save some gold, and keep bring those two guys out right away, force the board presence. I feel like he tried to play it like a control deck, and I don't feel like that's what the deck wanted to do. So I feel like there might have been some disconnect there between Brian and the deck he was playing. It seemed neat. I liked some of the things I saw. I don't know if the two in Shadows is ever going to be worth not having Lewin, but, I mean, you're still dropping 7 gold worth of Econ first turn. That is super solid. So, I don't know. But that was a cruising, so I felt really good. Second round, top 4, playing Tommy. And I was like, hey, we did this earlier, and I won. So it's, and I just kicked the crap out of Brian, so karma tells me I'm going to get my ass rocked. So he flops super strong. Pre-plots a ton of epics, and I know Fear of Winter is coming. And like an idiot, I try to play my deck straight. I drop at the gate. I mean, I go get the Riders instead of Lewin for the military icon, like in the Warcrest. Like, that's all good. But the right play there is always, always to Valor. If they're rocking out and they don't necessarily have a card in Shadows, Valor. And hope they don't have the non-kneeler, or hope you can get around their one guy. You have some kind of control for that one guy. Is the right way to do it. Always the right way to do it. And I didn't. I didn't do that. I tried to play it straight. He steamrolled me. It was quick and painless. Well, not necessarily painless, but it was quick. And that was that. So that was over. Ben and Tommy met in the finals. Tommy rolled right through. Ben just couldn't get anywhere near enough control, anywhere near quick enough. Tommy takes home the cup. We drank out of it all night. It was a great time.
Sweet.
A lot of lessons learned. It was nice to feel invigorated again. It was nice to kind of get some edge for the competitive scene again. I feel much more stirred and ready to go. I got another store championship February 21st. Yes. In Bloomington, Illinois. So, hometown. Looking to go represent. Take that. I've never actually outright won an event. So, I'm starting to get kind of hungry for that one in a big way. I know that makes me greedy. Probably getting a little big for my britches, but I'm excited, and, you know, I'm ready for it. So, trying to put in some extra work, getting excited. Like you, I was in a real lull, and I've been a real Debbie Downer on the podcast, and I apologize for that, but getting out there and seeing the guys, drinking some beers, playing some quality games helped, and I feel, you know, ready to go.
Glad to hear it kind of lifted your spirits some here.
So yeah, I got a new deck. I've got two decks. I've got the one from Bruno and another one that was talking about a funny deck I built a long time ago, and then realizing that with what has come out that could be a real thing. I mean, obviously far toned down from that, but a drunk thought turned into a sober deck building session in the morning, and I think we might be onto something there. So. Yeah, we may actually hear a report of me going to a tournament without Stark. It would be nice to have some success with a different house, especially because I've detested, you know, the Wolves my whole Thrones career. So I'm probably taking Stark to Bloomington just because of Valentine's Day and potentially some new job stuff going on. I'm just a little busy, but hopefully when you start hearing, my big goal is Moon Boy. To bring something new down to Moon Boy. So we'll let Missouri take me through the field of fire and see how I come out.
Okay, for this segment, we've got another special interview on here. This time, we've got a gentleman out of Tulsa. So they're breaking their rare, meta silence here. By letting Jacob come on the show, which is pretty cool. And Jacob wound up winning the Tulsa Store Championship this weekend that I was down at. So thanks for coming on, Jacob. How'd you kind of get into the game, and how long you've been playing now?
Thanks for having me. And I've been playing about 3 years. And I first got into the game, actually, my brother Alex Kern, who's also on the boards and prominent in the Tulsa meta, had given me the game for my birthday, and we just sort of, you know, took off from the core set, which, looking back on, you know, things, it was a lot clunkier, I guess, than I sort of thought when I was playing it. But I'm so glad that I kept playing the game, and it's just been such a deep and just full experience, from the deck building to the community to everything. And I just, you know, I love every aspect of the game, and it's awesome that we got people like you doing the podcast and everything. And let's be honest, we all listen to both of them. So,
well, yeah, totally.
The community is just great that way, is my point. So, I'm glad I got into it.
Well, and you even lucked out, because you are down there in Tulsa with the Team Covenant guys, who, I don't want to knock any of the other stores in the game, but as far as like LCG support, they're just across the board, like they're pretty much second to none, right?
I mean, yeah, they all play their games, and that's what's important. And, you know, if anybody is trying to get some stuff for this game, just swing by Team Covenant and maybe get something from those guys, because they are great, and just what they're doing with the store and such a I think it's just a testament to you know, just putting that much stock into what you love to do, and they love to play games, so they're bringing it to Tulsa, and then I just hope that it grows from there. You know, everything just sort of spilled out of that store. You know,
oh,
I would not.
So you found the game first, and then found them.
Yeah. Alex just sort of got the game on a whim, and we just sort of went from there, you know, found out that there was a store in Tulsa and that they sold online, and we went in and checked it out, and it was just tables of just people playing games, and there was really nothing. I mean, you've been there, you know how it's set up. And it was awesome. It's just what got me into playing the games. That's the main focus.
Cool. Well, you, speaking of main focus, I'm sure listeners want the real meat and potatoes here.
Should we just get into the deck?
Well, yeah, I was going to say the real meat and potatoes here is, so what did you take to this big open empty place with all these tables and people playing games?
Okay, so I brought Lannister Knights, and it was, I'm sure, similar to Lannister Knights that you've mentioned on the show, which I have encountered before, as you know, and I just... you know, with all the new Kingsguard support and all this stuff, like, well, it's not new now, but it just seemed like a good meta call the more that I thought about it. And I've actually got to give credit again to Alex. We play a lot together and test a lot together. And, he had brought up a Stark Knights deck to test for this tournament. And, you know, by the end of the game, we were like, you know, he had won and we were like, yeah, it's great unless it runs into another Knights deck. And I was like, that's interesting. Well, I am a Lannister player. I should have clarified that to begin with. That's what I mostly play, but I do dabble in some Baratheon, some Greyjoy. You know, I just went with the classic package and put it together and tried it. You know, I did the cities. I did Preston, Alchemist Guild Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Guild Hall, man, does work. Let me tell you. You know, I made a few meta calls as far as, like, numbers of cards and sort of, like, the event suite and things like that. And I'll just touch on them real quickly.
Did you have? I'm really curious on.
There wasn't really a suite per se, but, you know, it was just Harry the Riverlands because Harry the Riverlands. Mm-hmm. and let's see. House Divided to help with that Night Control, you know, and when your opponent's trying to throw some out there, it's kind of a easier play than it would be in other decks. And then, of course, the Paper Shield, just classic canceling your stuff.
Okay, gotcha. Did you wind up needing that House Divided any during the day?
I think I ended up playing it once every game, and it was canceled at least half of the time. but, you know, I'm glad that I had it there. I made a particularly, I don't know, bad or good meta call by tossing in a new Maya Stone. I expected to see a lot of that new 4-6-2 plot, and I did. I ran into it several times, but I never had her in hand when I ran into it.
That's a bummer. Did you see any of the other castles or just Fallen from Favor?
I just saw Fallen from Favor. Of course, with it being that new, people haven't really had time to play with it as a suite. But that one in particular just has, it's so universal. Any deck can use it.
I would agree there. I loved that plot all day. I was definitely one of the people, running that against you there.
Yeah. I just never saw Maya when I needed her. Of course she was a singleton, but I mean, I would just take her out and go on about my life.
Didn't you say that put you up to over 60?
That put me to 62. Okay. The deck was running 61. I've been known to run 63 at tournaments pretty often. I think when I went to Worlds 2013, it was 63, maybe 64, Lannister Summer deck. And you know, I still managed to win some games with it. So, you know, I run the cards that I like and I think are going to do well. And some of them are meta calls at that time, not so much, but the more I've played the game, that's more of a tweaking aspect that, you know, I love about getting deeper into this game.
Well, so how, I mean, we know obviously it must have done well overall, for you to take down the title. But I'm curious a little more insight about how some of those meta calls went on a game-to-game basis. Because the field, I think, was more diverse than I expected down there. So that was good.
Yeah, it was and wasn't. Of course, with this year, you know, you get a slightly lower turnout than you'd wish. But we still had, you know, quite a few players. And I can briefly kind of go through the games and see if any of that stuff comes up.
Yeah.
So first game was against a Stark No Agenda, kind of an old, just the Viper's Bannerman and, what's his name? The Kindly Man. It was Trix.
Oh, that I hadn't seen in a
while. So it kind of threw me off. I lost that game. It was my only loss of the day. I lost my first game and proceeded to win every game after that. And
that's how it's done.
Yeah. I mean, because that first one I was like, this is just strange. And it was Ben Ruggles who, you know, works at TC and so, you know, he hops in during some of the tournaments and usually it brings out sort of an older deck. And I, you know, he went on to say there was like nothing from the past two cycles in it or something. But I think he did have that new deadly guy that shuffles back in and a few others, but yeah, so I lost that one just forgetting about, how Kindly Man triggered off of two challenge types and just little things like this, and it just progressively got worse and worse. And, of course, it was a classic. He had more economy and setup than me, and it just kind of proceeded to wreck me from there. So I lost that one, game one. Game two was against a Bera Maester's Path, played by Keith Wigner. That deck was there. You know, it was running some tricks with, you know, just kind of the first ranger business, getting to keep standing all your night's watch and all that stuff. But yeah, I don't know if anyone's ran into that deck, but I won't shed too much more light on it. But it's kind of a neat deck. But you know, I ran some stuff. I was running times one enslaved, in case I dealt with some Maester tricks, which I generally do in Lannister, just because it works so well in that on that card. But yeah, it was a really close game. I got through by the skin of my teeth, you know, type of situation. And, I don't know. He got to pretty high power, but I just was able to finally, keep the Neil, keep the control going, Guildhall, popping Preston in and out, getting draw. I eventually caught up to him. And my clutch card in that was a times one Tunnels of the Red Keep. Which I played early game, knowing that there was going to be some burn.
Mm-hmm.
So the next game was our game, actually. I was playing your Martell Aloof.
Right.
And you said earlier that you remember how it went on your side, which was different from the way I was looking at it. So
yeah, I'm very curious about the flip side.
Yeah, you know, my overall thought was that prize is what won me that game, just because it got me there before you, and you should have gotten there for probably the last two turns, but I just had so much control going with all your big guys just staying knelt and eventually getting rid of them with I believe I was able to Valor them away and get quite a bit of prize at the same time.
Yeah, I think you got three or four.
And knocked your renown down, so you know it really evened the game out. And my overall thought was that prize on your agenda really won me that game, and really it did in my final matchup too, which was against Chris Kaiser's same deck, the Marcella.
Oh yeah.
So, all right.
It's worth watching that, and I definitely have to just reiterate a big part of you schooling me there in the end, I think, was definitely your Iron Throne. So I'm kind of curious how many copies of it you were running, because having that, to marshal the turn I finally drew into a Bannerman and just shutting down my draw, that hurt.
Well, you know, if I think I might have had it in a few turns before you remember, because I just kind of jotted down quickly some game notes, and I put that I had a turn one Iron Throne.
Really?
I set it up or played it turn one.
Maybe I just didn't realize you had it until I drew the Bannerman, and it mattered.
Other than your Tyeen, who wasn't really ever in a position to work for you, just because of the way initiative and stuff was working out that game.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Claim Viper strong against Neil, definitely a good call on your part. It almost wrecked me.
Yeah. Just barely hoped there. If you had just gone ahead and made a challenge with Tyrion, if you'd just been greedy on that one turn. So, like, you know, well done to you, I think, for having that foresight there.
Thanks. You know, I actually don't usually play like that. I usually do take the bait in those instances, but I was playing, I feel, very smartly at this particular tournament, and, you know, I feel like I earned what I got, but I had a lot of fun doing it, and, you know, there's just so many good decks you have to watch out for, and, you know, luck does have something to do with it. Prized has something to do with it, you know, so, but, you know, just the amount of control built into Lannister Knights is insane with the new Kingsguard. Like, it is all the and Baelin Swan, the Hound, all the S0 guys are just insane getting you stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think I saw you had Meron Trant in there that actually did some work, but I think I may be skipping a little too far ahead in the day.
You know, Meron Trant really didn't come up too much other than it was immune to, like, first snow turns. And, you know, like, I was also running two of the Ares Okarth that stand because I was curious if you were going to bring your Knights deck. And I also expected Chris Kaiser or somebody up in Tulsa to bring that stupid Lannister Dark Wings deck.
Yeah.
And I felt like Ares Okarth times two was a good call to kind of go against that Neil.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, so how the rest of the... Well, I guess there was one more round after you played me and then the cut. So how'd the games play out from there aside from wins?
So the last game after was against Zach Bunn, who's up at Team Covenant, a great player, great friend. It's really got me into the games and the community. And it was just kind of one of those, ended up pretty much one-sided in my favor pretty quickly due to really only one major fault of his. And, you know, I just was able to knock Danny by getting everything knelt or somehow controlled early game. And I got a bunch of prize by making him eat through his Harrenhal early game. And it just ended up working out for me in the end.
Solid. That's a pretty nasty deck. I played against him earlier in the day, and it can get there.
It was an insane deck. It was an awesome deck. So I make the cut, the top four, and first match is against a House of Dreams Iron Victory deck played by a good friend, Josh Forbes, who is also in the Tulsa meta, as it were. And, you know, he managed to get to the cut, and it was just a situation where I was able to force his LIV triggers on, like, Intrigue Weenies to try and force the use of it so that I could still get my guys through and keep Preston alive. And between Alchemist Guildhall and getting some Harry the Riverlands early game, it just, you know, I was able to get past anything he was trying to kill off. I still managed to keep my tricks going.
Okay. Well, that seems really fortuitous. So why was he in such a crunch on these, like, intrigue weenie challenges, you know, to blow the LIV on him?
Well, I played a turn one besiege to hit his economy, so he was having trouble playing things, and so, you know, he just kind of I guess wanted to keep everything available to him. It's just one of those situations where you're just trying to force them to do it or not, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And so I would just launch an intrigue knowing I was going to win it unopposed. He doesn't know what kind of triggers or, you know, things like that I could I could go on from there. And it's just one of those things where, at least from my perspective, if you're up against that deck, you want to just sort of force either those challenges through or to try and get them to use the trigger.
Okay.
Enslave showed up in that game as well, late game. And just between cities and, again, the guild hall with Preston or any of the S0 guys, so you're very likely to get one and set up, pop it and draw, get your draw if you don't set up a knight. It's easy to get things going, to get the engine running with the Lannister Knights deck.
Oh, yeah, and it's so self-feeding once you have it running, you know?
Really, it is, and it's funny that we say once we have it running because in the final match, it's against Chris Kaiser with the Martell Aloof, and I really didn't have it running. I sort of eventually drew into what I needed, but this is a game where the only location I ever have in play is that Alchemist Guildhall. That's the only thing I play. I might have dropped a city on the same turn, but it was rough on my end, but also rough on Chris's end. He mulliganed into a 2-card setup.
Ooh.
And I set up, I think it was only 3, but it was sort of like they were all good cards. I had an S0 to pop out to either even my draw or get the extra card. And, I just was able to get the guild hall. I think that was actually a card that I set up. I just didn't get it out until later. But, you know, between the gold weenies that Lannister offers, you can sort of circumvent, if you get in a position like that and being able to play them early game is great. He was also running the Claim Viper. It was sort of one of those situations where I had to figure out how to deal with him, and he dupes him before too long. And then what I think was probably my best play of the day was drawing into and setting up when to play and how to play a Sir Mandon Moore.
Mandon Moore.
Yeah.
That was what I had mixed up when I said Maren Trant earlier.
Oh, that's who you
my
meant earlier.
My apologies.
Okay. Yeah, Mandon Moore, you know, he showed up, I think, in Shadows, but never came out a couple of the games. And then, you know, he showed up in that game, and it was what I needed. I think I drew him the turn before or the turn of him duping his Flame Viper. And, you know, he had a huge board by that point, like a lot of cards. And so I just sort of was biding my time and just running the Neil City, you know, Kill City, whatever I needed to at least make the challenges kind of swing to my favor. I literally just had a bunch of low cost dudes most of the time. And it really was that Alchemist Guild Hall that sort of allowed me to get to where I needed to then eventually get him out, flip Valor, and he couldn't save his Viper. So then I was able to play out everything in my hand, and he had, I think it was 1, maybe 2 cards in hand at that point. And, I was able to close it out from there.
Nice. I mean, congratulations to you. I think you had a solid read on things, and obviously a great day. And I can even doubly vouch for that since I played against you. You were playing well.
Well, thank you, sir. It's one of those situations, I think, when you actually run a deck, which I don't normally, but run it for several weeks or even months and just sort of keep plowing away at it, because it's a build I'd had before and was sort of revisiting. And, if there's a deck that you're really familiar with, you know, that's generally what you want to run. And it could work in your favor, you know, especially when you're really getting in game and just trying to think about those, you know, trigger by trigger, round by round, phase by phase, and, just sort of getting into it.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely making me regret not taking the Knights myself.
I can assure you that you're not the sole reason I brought that deck. It was a intriguing thought for me that I wonder if you bring it too. But it's not like it was a deck that I built, you know, the day before or something like that.
Right.
Like I said, my brother practicing with that Stark Knights and us just having that conversation about, you know, oh, this would be great unless it runs into another knight's deck. And I was like, Lannister can deal with those other knights, you know? And so I just proceeded to build it, again with, sort of the new cards and different meta calls, and it worked out.
Awesome. Well, congratulations again. And, thanks for coming on the show to chat a little bit about how things went.
Thanks for having me, and just got to say thanks to, Covenant Store as well for hosting a great store championship, and thanks for coming down again, and we always have you, and I always love going up there for your store championship and things, and we had a great time.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you here in a little under a month now, and, just like our tradition kind of is here with the guests, do you have any props or slops you want to throw out there in general nerddom or other Thrones realm?
Oh, man. I've been staying home with my son a lot, and we've been watching some of that. I got to give a prop to that Batman Brave and the Bold.
Dude,
It is so good.
I did not expect it. I sat down to watch one episode, not really knowing what I was getting into. And
I heard you guys talk about it, and I was intrigued because I had originally, a few years ago when it came out, I was like, oh, I got to watch that. And I never did. And then I saw it was on Netflix.
Right.
We got our Netflix back a few months ago. And, like I said, my son, he's 4 months now, so he's kind of too young to follow it, but he loves the bright colors. And, it's just kind of one of those things where we both enjoy it. And I haven't got to watch Saturday morning cartoons in forever. And it's the ultimate Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah. It does everything you could possibly want in a Saturday morning cartoon.
In every episode.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't drag that out.
Half an hour, you're set. You got your whole morning in.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, and then also, just props to Team Covenant again, just for generally hosting such great tournaments and just being so supportive of the community. And I highly suggest anybody to check out their videos and the other games that they cover.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, and we'll try and see if we can drag you back again after you win Moonboy, right?
Yeah, that's what's gonna happen. I'm hoping to take a mostly original deck. So it's a revisit of a deck that I've never actually taken to a tournament, but I've always wanted to.
Okay.
So I think I'm actually gonna bring it this time.
I look forward to seeing it.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Shall we jump over to props and slops?
You bet.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and jump out with kind of a combined prop here since they're on the same topic. And that's going to be, in the global sense, to the wave of episodic video games, so to speak. Now, most of them have all been Telltale, but a new company... or not new, but another company has jumped into that fray as well. So since last we listened, I've played through episode 2 of the Telltale Game of Thrones series titled The Lost Lords. I still kind of want to stay away from spoilers on that stuff. But I will say that this episode ended with possibly the most moving song that I have ever heard in a video game. Easily on par with hearing The Reigns of Castamere on the TV show for the first time. So that's pretty sweet, especially considering this was not yet another reuse of The Reigns of Castamere. So go check that out, people. The other one is a little company you may have heard of called Square Enix, who just put out a new game by the studio that did Remember Me a couple years ago. Which is a pretty sweet game in its own right. But this new one is called Life is Strange. And it's pretty much Brett Zeiler's dream video game. It's you basically play a teenage girl in high school. So, there's that. No, the game's actually way more interesting than that makes it sound. Early on, you discover that you have the ability to rewind time. So it's a neat gimmick for games like this that follow that kind of branching dialogue formula and the whole the actions you take now will have consequences in the future kind of thing, because up to a certain extent, you can find out what some of those consequences are. You can play out a conversation, you know, three or four different ways if you want to see at least some of what's going to happen. Eventually, it locks you into some choices whenever you you leave to go off and do something else. But there's that, and it also uses it as kind of an interesting puzzle solving mechanic. It's a sweet world, and it's, I don't know, nice to see a female protagonist that just happens to be some random girl that this stuff happened to, like, not just, you know, a normal person. Plus, the teenagers cuss a lot and actually kind of sound like real teenagers.
Well, that's the real authentic touch there.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful where you play this video game. There is a lot of profanity. So, just so you know. And there's some pretty heavy themes depending on what all you find out. Depending on certain answers to conversations, of course, you'll find out different things about some of the characters and their life circumstances, and some of them are kind of rough.
That sounds neat.
It's a blast. Between the two of those, that's the best $5 and, like, well, sorry, $10 between the two of them there, and like 5 to 6 hours of entertainment I've had in quite a while.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
This sales guy measured in is hours per dollar.
Exactly. And at that point, you know, it's like $2 an hour, maybe $1.75, something like that. It's probably worth it. Sounds not probably. Great. I would say it is. So, there you go.
You said it. I heard it. That's good.
Anything on your plate?
You know, I don't know. Lately I've been playing both Kerbal Space Program and Alien Isolation, both of which are incredibly difficult and impossibly frustrating. I don't know if I want a proper slop eat. Like, they both just kind of, this is nice, and it's taking up some time. I'm in the middle of job interviews, so they're nice kind of mental. It's nice for something else to be the big stressor in my life, like getting to the Kerbal equivalent of Mars or just getting anywhere in Alien Isolation. So that game is not for the faint of heart. And don't play it before you go to sleep, because suddenly you're like, I don't trust any of these doorways anymore. I just don't trust them. And that's weird, because, you know, I live in an apartment in Iowa, not a space station orbiting Jupiter.
And I assume there are several doorways.
There are. And the game just is bad. I mean, it's good, but it teaches you to trust no one, even yourself. So, lots of stress. Lots of literally, like, running and hiding underneath things for, like, 10 minutes. And Daniel come in the room. She's like, why are you under there? And I'm like, I'm hiding. She's like, this is weird. And then the alien eats you, and then she gets upset. And I'm like, see? Like, this happens. Gotta be careful. So, it's weird to see a grown man hide and be scared. But it definitely does that. It's a different kind of scary. Which I guess is good. Other props in my life. I'd like to shout out, you know, just to Tommy for being a gracious host. You know, for those listening, you know, having people who are willing to take, like, build those connections with other metas and take people in for the weekend does wonders for the tournament scene and the health of the game. And I wouldn't be able to make anywhere near the amount of events I did without the generosity of friends and other players in all these communities. So, you know, props to him, props to anyone else who's been doing that, because you really do make this game better for all of us. Make your tournaments better, you make your experiences better, just overall better time.
Awesome. Trying to think if I have anything else myself. Boy, That's a tough one. My free time pretty well went to that.
My nose. Oh. Well, that was unfortunate. So I'm going to slap this beer going up my nose. Oh.
Oh.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. You should be much more careful with that.
Ooh. Ooh. All right. We're back. We're okay.
Good, good. Yeah. Boy, aside from that, I guess I'm just going to keep throwing props out there to Constantine. Episode 12 was rocking as well. And, oh, hey, there we go. I knew I really did have something else to prop. Still in the TV realm. That's going to be to fellow LCG podcaster Ben Tully over on the Smuggler's Den, who is a contestant on this year's King of the Nerds. If you're not watching, you should be. So go check that out. He's one of the Cali guys. He also has played Thrones in the past. That's how I had met him. I don't know if he's still keeping up with it or has pretty well just moved to Star Wars. But he's sort of, one of us. So I know who I'm rooting for. Plus, the show's just pretty hilarious and great to watch in general.
Yeah, I need to get on that. Check it out. See how that stuff goes. Because I hear good things.
Yeah, it's really pretty hilarious. I mean, it's a reality TV show. So you have to kind of accept that. But a lot of it is just like, well, imagine any Thrones event, right? You have a competition. You have a winner, you have a lot of drinking, you have a lot of arguing about Battlestar Galactica and, I don't know, Aquaman. And, you know, that's basically this show, especially the drinking, from what I can tell. So I'm all in.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah. And there you have it. That's me for this week. I'm calling that it.
It's a good week. Let's see. I hear House of Cards was leaked earlier today. I missed it, obviously, because I was at work. Silly work. Excited for that to come back. That'll be back soon. Walking Dead just started. Good TV is just on its way. The cold winter is starting to be behind us. Doesn't feel like it in most parts of the country, but we are on our way out. And the joys that is spring cable are upon us.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I think that might be it for the week. Hope you enjoyed another fun-ass episode, as our beloved Daryl would say. I think we're going to have Tommy next week, and hopefully start getting some exciting announcements about some stuff coming up. Like to pick up some steam heading into this last year of the first edition, try and make an exciting one. Do some cool stuff. I just want good internet so I can stream games and talk with all of our wonderful listeners. Because right now it's difficult enough talking with Will right now. That's us, other people.
It is tricky. I look forward to you having that internet as well.
I would love to move and have a nicer place and a better job and better internet for the fans. It's really for the listeners.
Yeah.
That I want.
Totally.
That's how much I like. So, there's that. If you want to talk to us, you can check us out on any social media you want at 2champs1chump, across the board. Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, I don't know. If there's anywhere else you want to talk to us, text Will. I'm sure everyone has his number, because he wants everyone to be his friend.
There you go. So,
till next time, listeners, I think it's just... Will, do you want to do it?
Do what?
Just a little danger zone!
Oh, right, that one. The ghost who never